All right, everybody, welcome to Pseudo Intellectual Live. It is so great to have you here. As always, we appreciate any liking and subscribing that you guys may be doing. And today we have a special guest. This is someone I've been following for years at this point, but this is actually my first time speaking to her. I don't want to say in person, but at least on stream. So please welcome to the program, Miss Carrie Smith. She is a podcast host. She has the show Deprogrammed, and she's also a former SJW. So always interesting to see her insights about what's happening in the current progressive space. Carrie, it's so great to have you.
It's so great to be here. I'm so happy we finally got to meet. And I'm going to get to meet you in person soon.
Yes, actually, before we get into anything else, let's do a really quick shout out. If you guys are in the Austin area, really exciting, April 27th, both Carrie and I, as well as a bunch of other guests, we're all going to be at Minds Fest at the Vulcan. So we're going to have, Destiny's going to be there, Shane Cashman, Ian Crossland from Timcast IRL, Alex Stein, a whole bunch
Jimmy
of people.
Jimmy Dore,
it's going to be a good time. We're going to have panels about like politics and stuff like that, as well as stand-up. I'm going to be performing stand-up there. It's going to be a riot. If you want tickets, you can get that in the link of this description. I'm really excited for it. I think it's going to be a great time. And if you've been to one of these Minds events before, they're always a hoot and a holler. So definitely encourage you to come see us live. But Carrie, so you've kind of made it your mission now to expose a lot of the things that are going on in the progressive movement, especially with regard to gender. And now, for people who are watching this, we are on YouTube, so we are going to be operating this conversation with a caveat of like, we at least want to have this platform while we can. So, you know, we're going to try to tiptoe around the terms of service here. But Carrie, you've been sharing this really interesting story coming out of the UK. It seems like they've now banned puberty blockers for minors, if I'm understanding that right. Would you mind walking people through what's been happening over there?
Yes. So I think, first of all, this is huge news. This is a big win. And it follows right on the heels of Michael Schellenberger and Mia Hughes releasing the WPATH files. That's the World Professional Association for Transgender Health files, which came out last week. But this was in the works apparently for a while. It's the result of, you know, the UK is one of the few countries that's actually commissioned a systematic independent review of all available research and evidence to determine if it's medically ethical to give things like puberty blockers to children. And as a result of that review by medical professionals, not by the government, they had an independent review by doctors, they determined there's no evidence to support doing this. And so they've now said, we're not going to do it. They are going to continue to have some clinical trials to study it. And I believe there's around 100 children so far who are in those trials, but otherwise they're not going to be prescribing it if you're a minor.
That's crazy. So what do you think is going to be the result of this? Because even like, for example, on YouTube, it's actually, you could have your channel jeopardized if you come out and say things like, I don't believe children should medically transition, right? Because YouTube, or at least the people who are operating behind the scenes, flagging stuff, there's a good chance they're going to say, no, that's hate speech. This is, you know, anti-trans, blah, blah, blah. What's going to happen now where we actually have not only this government policy, but like you said, the fact that this is backed up by doctors, like by the medical community. This isn't something that's ideologically motivated, like sort of a Matt Walsh thing. This is morally wrong. This is actually people in the medical profession. Do you think that's going to change the way we even talk about this subject at all? Because I found it hard trying to navigate this when anytime you try to bring it up, you have, you know, trans activists saying, oh, well, the AAP, they say blah, 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 therefore you are just a science denier.
Yeah, it's actually quite the opposite. They're doing what they often do from the social justice or woke left, which is they engage in projection. So they say if you oppose this, that, like you said, it's not scientific or medical, it's quite the opposite. The WPATH files, if people haven't read them, I really suggest you look at them, watch a video about them, whatever it takes to learn what's in them. Because the evidence in those files, it's communications on the record from doctors who are performing the so-called gender-affirming care for minors. And it's also video footage. You can watch them on video. And one of the things that's in those files that's most damning is that the doctors themselves are admitting that, number one, the children don't understand what they're consenting to. So publicly, the doctors say, well, it's okay because the children are giving it informed consent. But in these files, you can see the doctors are saying things like, well, when I try to talk to a 14-year-old about sterilization and how this might make them sterile, it's like talking to a wall. A doctor says right. that. And they're on video saying things like this, that the children, they said, you know, these kids haven't even had biology class yet. If you're talking to a 9-year-old about preserving their fertility, they don't really understand what it is they're consenting to. I mean, who at 9 years old knows if they're going to want to have kids or not? You know, your opinions change, your ideas change. A lot of people at that age, even when the doctor says, a lot of the kids at that age, when I talk to them about these things during the informed consent part, they say things like, ooh, girls, gross. Like, I don't want to have.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. They're 9. And yes. Like, this is not a shock to anyone who's actually spent time around children. But what I just, okay. So what I don't understand is that it seems like even within the medical community, there are two standards as to what constitutes informed consent. I mean, I don't see, thankfully, a lot of doctors, maybe it happens, but a lot of doctors doing things like performing plastic surgery just for cosmetic reasons on, you know, let's say like a 15-year-old. But I have seen, unfortunately, 15-year-old girls who have gotten double mastectomies or top surgery. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, if you can consent to one, it seems like you should be mentally capable of consenting to the other. It seems like there's a double standard at play here when it comes to this trans issue.
So in these files, they show that ideology is what's pushing this so-called gender medicine, not science, not medicine. In fact, they explicitly say several times in these files, you'll see them saying things like, well, a child doesn't actually have to experience gender dysphoria to be trans, to qualify anymore. So, wow. So now they don't have to meet any standard whatsoever. They don't even have to feel like uncomfortable in their biological sex. So why are you doing this? It's just all based on a subjective feeling of the child. And here's what's crazy. There's one exchange in these files where one doctor is asking for advice from the other doctors, and they say, I have a patient with body identity integrity disorder. Now, if people don't know what that is, it's a new term. Basically, it means someone who is so-called trans-abled. They identify as someone with a disability, and they come into the doctor with like an amputation, like, please cut my arm off. And the doctor is asking, going back and forth, like, you know, what are the medical ethics here? And the doctor is basically saying throughout this whole correspondence, it's very similar to the trans issue. And I think this patient would be more comfortable if we could do the amputation. But unfortunately, I think ethics-wise, it's still a very hostile environment for people who have this so-called BIID. And they're admitting, and they say it's hostile like it used to be for so-called trans kids. And it's just, it's so absurd to read this and to see doctors discussing about the possibilities of like, maybe soon we'll be able to also do these selective amputations for people who wish to be disabled. And that kind of puts it in, it kind of puts the trans kids thing in perspective, in stark relief, because you're thinking, wow, this is a doctor who's grappling with the fact that if a 9-year-old or, you know, or a 14-year-old comes in and says on a whim, I'm trans, that the, so far what we've been doing here in the States anyway, in a lot of states, the doctor's like, okay, we're going to do a mastectomy on a child, or we're going to do the vaginoplasty, which requires, you know, castrating the penis, the scrotum on a child. And, but if a person says, an adult says, I identify as disabled, they're not yet able to take an arm off. They can take these genitals off. They can chemically castrate children as well. That's one of the things in the files. I don't know if I can say that on your channel, but
yeah. And I don't know about you, but between the whole pandemic and this trans issue, it's also really, it's brought to light, at least for me, how people in the medical industry, they might be very knowledgeable when it comes to like the way that our bodies physically work, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they should be moral arbiters and making these decisions that have, I guess, ethical consequences.
Yes.
Because, you know, the idea that you would even think potentially of taking someone who has this disorder where they want to be an amputee and being like, you know what? Yes, actually, maybe we should cut off this perfectly healthy limb because of something in the mind. I think it's cause to step back and say, hang on a second. If these are the people who are making decisions with that same moral framework about like our children and transitioning them, we need to have a conversation about this. We need to have a conversation about this. That's crazy. And I think it's really interesting to approach the trans issue, because we often talk about it, at least on my channel, in terms of ideology and social constructs. But it's also interesting to see how the dialogue around it has changed over the years in medicine. Because I remember, you know, I grew up in the 90s and, you know, early 2000s, it was very much the idea that when you're trans, it's you are literally, you know, a woman trapped in a man's body, or vice versa. And I remember at the time, even one of the first videos I ever did on YouTube, it was looking at studies that showed that actually, yeah, there are some, you know, some brain patterns that are more similar to like natal women in trans women. So, you know, it's trying to build a foundation that actually this is a neurological condition, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, from that perspective, I was very much of the belief, well, oh, if this is like literally you have a woman's brain in a man's body, well, then, you know, this isn't even a question of ideology or whatever. This is just like a medical issue. They've almost entirely moved away from that concept now. You know, there's the idea that men and women's brains are even different. That's something that a progressive won't back up. The idea that you should have any type of gender dysphoria before transitioning, that I think I've heard it called transmedicalism. And it's crazy how much, even just within, I would say, 5 years, there's been such a pivot as to what exactly, you know, what exactly constitutes transgenderism. But the UK, they're not the first country to say no to the hormone blockers. I think there are some Scandinavian ones as well, if I'm not mistaken. Do you think that the US will follow suit? Because it almost feels like in the US and Canada, we're going the opposite way as these European countries.
Well, I guess some people call me white-pilled. I forget. I don't know what all the colors mean, but
white is good. That means you're hopeful.
Okay. But I do believe we're going to ban it here, because how can we not? This is, as some people have called it, the biggest, you know, medical scandal of our lifetime, of many lifetimes. I mean, I think you could talk about the COVID years maybe being on par in some ways, but this one specifically is targeting the most vulnerable among us. It's children, first of all. Mm-hmm. And then also within that category, the most vulnerable children. It's children who are autistic, who have other mental health problems, who in some cases have personality disorders or some type of dissociative disorder. It's children who have anorexia, children who have sexual abuse in their past. And so they're targeting the most vulnerable of the vulnerable. And I can't see that standing in the US once people start to understand what it is. It's the woke have done a good job, the social justice, this whole ideology that I used to be a part of, they've done a good job of, it's often called weaponizing people's empathy, but they've done a great job with that, with propaganda and the kind of stuff they put out there that, you know, if you're an empathetic person, if you're a caring person, if you don't agree with bullying and you want to support so-called trans kids, and then you have to support this. But once you start talking to, as I have, some of the people on the left who casually support that, and you start explaining some of the facts, people change their mind about children, as they should. And so, like I said, I hope the WPATH files makes an impact. If I could say one really important thing in the WPATH files that I haven't mentioned yet, the puberty blockers, which is the subject of, you know, what they just banned in the UK for kids. You know, the woke and the social justice people have done a great job of putting out the mantra that puberty blockers are a pause button. They're just a pause button. They're a pause button. You hear this all the time at protests and stuff, people yelling that. And they say it's reversible. It's completely reversible. They say that. It's not true. And the president of WPATH, the president of the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, Dr. Marcy Bowers, is on video and in written records, admitting that 100% of the little boys that they put on puberty blockers at Tanner stage two, so that's like around age 11, 100% of those little boys go on into adulthood to never achieve orgasm, zero sexual function. They're chemically castrating them. And there's the doctor admitting that.
Well, that's for anyone who's at all familiar with medicine, the idea that any type of like pharmaceutical has zero long-term side effects. It's literally just like, oh, once you stop taking it, everything returns back to normal. And while you're taking it, no other like
right
ancillary, like that does not exist. Even with something like a Tylenol, that does not exist. So the idea that they've been kind of feeding people that it's basically just a pause button on and off, like a light switch, that obviously I think was never true. But I think the extent to which it's a lie and just misinformation, that's shocking. I've also seen studies talking about like even long-term side effects like osteoporosis.
Yeah.
Just because your body isn't able to, I guess, grow in the same way. And it's like puberty, they're treating it as if it's some sort of sickness or illness. And that's also part of what really bothers me about this entire movement. It's trying to demonize children's bodies, how they should be naturally. Like, you know, a girl's healthy breasts are not something that are wrong with them. It's not the wrong body when your body goes through changes of maturing naturally. And I think trying to feed into these almost neuroses that some of these children very well do have, it's just so toxic. And I don't understand how these people have gotten away with it for as long as they have. I do want to take a quick pause here to say a quick thank you to today's sponsor, Beam. So you guys probably know this, but I have a toddler, and oh my goodness, the effect that sleep has on my day-to-day, it's just indescribable. Whether I get a good night's sleep because of Little Miss Riley or they don't, not just my mood is affected, my overall productivity, the clarity of my mental thinking. And so if you're someone who has trouble with sleeping, there's a good chance that it's affecting your day-to-day. And I have bad news for you. It's also likely affecting your health if it is long-term. We need good sleep. Otherwise, even things like our immune system can take a dive. So if you have trouble sleeping and you want to fix that, I highly recommend you check out Beam's Dream Powder. They're science-backed, healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Better sleep has never tasted better. So basically what I do every night before I go to bed is I heat up a cup of hot milk, add in the Beam Dream Powder, froth it up. It's basically like a delicious hot chocolate drink that actually helps me sleep, stay asleep, and I wake up the next day not feeling groggy or anything like that, but actually feeling refreshed, which you know, for some other sleep aids isn't necessarily the case. Beam right now, they have a bunch of cool flavors like chocolate peanut butter, cinnamon cocoa, and sea salt caramel, only 15 calories and 0 grams of sugar. So in Dream, there is all natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, melatonin, and nano CBD. So if you're someone who struggles with sleep like I do, you've got to check it out. You can head on over to shopbeam.com/Lauren, shopbeam.com/Lauren, and use the code Lauren at checkout for 40% off a limited time. Again, that is shopbeam.com/Lauren with the code Lauren for 40% off. This is a really easy way to integrate a sleep aid into your nighttime routine. And again, it's not just going to help you stay asleep and fall asleep. It actually tastes good too and is a little treat. So big fan of Beam over here. All right. Now, Carrie, you are in Texas, correct?
I am. The great state of Texas.
Yes, the great state of Texas. But I feel like I also have to ask, at the same time where we are seeing, you know, the UK saying no to these puberty blockers, we're also in even places like Texas seeing parental custody kind of be challenged in regard to whether parents are willing to go along with a transition for their child. Doesn't that worry you at all?
It does worry me. A lot of that has to do with our transplants who are moving in. And a lot of them are moving to one specific place, which is Austin, and then the surrounding areas. And, you know, I'm one to talk. I moved here. I'm from South Carolina originally, but I lived in Los Angeles for 15 years. I moved here via LA. I don't have a problem.
I'm like that with Nashville, right? I'm a transplant here, but now that I'm here, I feel like I got to kick out the ladder. from under. Okay, like now it's full. No one else comes.
Or the way I like to say it is, if you're a cultural refugee, if you're coming here because you like the culture in Texas and you want to be a part of this culture, great. We right. need you. But if you're a cultural missionary and you want to bring your woke religion here, like we don't need your missionary. You can stay wherever you are. That's where I'm like unfriendly. Like, no. Mm-hmm. Why would you want to come here and change it? If you're right.
if you're thinking was so great, then the place where they all think like you should be amazing. Why would you leave?
Yes. So when I see things like yesterday, I saw a headline, comedian Alana Grazer.
Right. Yeah.
She said in a headline in the Austin American Statesman that she was here at South By, and she said that Texas is dangerous for women. It's dangerous to live here. And I love that stuff. I'm like, yes, it is. Put that out there.
It's so dangerous. Do not come.
Don't come. Yeah. I'm like, tell your friends in California. It's like, I'm lucky that my husband and my gun gave me permission to do this interview today, because I have to ask them for everything. And I got to wear a Handmaid's outfit when I go to the store. And I'm just
kidding. Everything just that run with heard it. Is absolutely true. Under any circumstances move here.
Save yourselves. It's too late for me. The Texas patriarchy got me. It's awful here. It's a nightmare, but you guys can stay where you are. Don't come. Save yourselves.
No, for sure. And that's crazy, because I feel like they're almost like locusts. A lot of these, like what you termed, mm-hmm. I love it, cultural missionaries. Like they kind of like, they eat up the Californias, they eat up the Chicagos and the New Yorks. And then they flee to places and then change those. Like we're already seeing the effect of them in Arizona, right? Arizona is now purple. A lot of there have been some pretty damaging policies that, Arizona, it's like, well, being purple, you have the good and you have the bad with them. And I look at Nashville and I'm already worried. Like we chose basically the reddest place we could find. One of the reasons we didn't move to Florida is like, well, that's kind of purple. We chose one of the reddest places we could find, but already because of all the people from California and New York who are coming to Nashville as a city, it's like very blue. It's very progressive now. And it's frustrating because we can't just keep moving and fleeing while these people bring over their bad policies. Yeah. I've had people joke about like, all right, like if you come to a new state, like no voting for like 5 years or something like that.
I mean, I used to joke about that as well, but now I'm kind of like, why not do that? Look, you maybe you have to have some skin in the game and be here for a while, because a lot of people are also, I know that people in Los Angeles are buying second homes here to get and putting it as their primary home so they can get the tax benefits of being in Texas. And they're splitting their time between, Austin and Los Angeles. And I'm just sort of like, maybe you shouldn't get to vote here until you've been here for 5 years and you're really invested in the community. And maybe that would stop some people from thinking, oh, I'm going to come there and be a missionary and change everything with my vote. I don't know. I've been thinking about it. What's the harm in it?
Well, it's interesting. I see this message from Michael Iverson. Don't flee, fight. He says fly, but I'm pretty sure he means fight. I am tired of people retreating. So, this is something that I could kind of see both sides of. I come from Canada, not just like Canada. Oh, I'm from Alberta. I'm from Quebec. So the most leftist authoritarian society, I would probably say, in the world. There is not one single COVID measure that they did not implement to the fullest extreme. When you're in a situation like that, and frankly, if you are a conservative in like specifically like LA or New York, you're not fighting. I'm sorry, but like the people around you, 95% of them will never agree with you. In my opinion, all you're doing is funding policies you claim to hate. I think it's probably it's a different story if you're somewhere like purple, blue, blue and red mix, like a Virginia. But I mean, I believe in pragmatism. I believe in being realistic. I would love to say like, yeah, no matter what it is, you can fight and take back. But I don't think that's the case. And I think ultimately you do have a responsibility to your own family. I don't want my children growing up in a bad situation. And I know it's a bad situation just because I'm trying to make a political point. That to me just...
What you're saying is, I think, absolutely true. There's a point at which if the place becomes completely lost, then it's sort of like with me with churches. Like I know some friends who have gone to churches that have become infected by social justice ideology, by woke ideology, which is antithetical to the gospel, mm-hmm. but they will stay and try to fight. And I do enough speaking. I speak all my opinions. I can say whatever I want online now. I'm not beholden to anyone anymore. You know, I left my career so I can say what I want. Right. And, but in my church, I can't stay and fight in that church. I need a church that's going to help me, build me up, give me strength, teach me, lead me. So I think it just depends to what degree has it been invaded. Yeah. Austin, for me, I know some friends who are still living there. There's a whole Based in Austin group now. You know, they're trying to take it back. Good for them. But I want to be in a community that's more solid. So I'm outside of Austin now and I love it. But I'm still staying and fighting, guys. Right? Just in the surrounding areas, which are also being invaded. Georgetown, right. Texas. Georgetown is currently, it's one of the top, I keep seeing it listed as one of the top five places people are moving. It's about 30 minutes from Austin. And, you know, Austin has the slogan, like, keep Austin weird. And so we're trying to make keep Georgetown normal a thing. Like, but it's, you know, it's under assault from people from California and Austinites moving up because they're getting priced out.
Right. So I do want to get your take on something that I saw recently. So the past few days we had International Women's Day, which isn't really like a huge thing. I think I've heard in Russia specifically, they almost treat it like Valentine's Day, like the for really? Like teachers and moms. Like, yeah, it's like a big thing to honor women. I feel like in America and a lot of other countries, it's basically just like virtue time on social media for some politicians. But Lady Gaga caused quite the controversy by choosing to honor International Women's Day with Dylan Mulvaney, of all people. So we're going to look at that. But first, we do have some super chats from folks watching. I'll Fight You Naked, who, hey. Longtime viewer of the show, I appreciate you, despite the name. What legal punishment do each of you think should be given to those found guilty of doing this to kids? So I'm guessing, you know, transitioning, different for surgeons or others. I would support actual like jail time. Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like, I don't think being a doctor gives you special immunity for making bad choices. And in fact, I think you actually have a responsibility to like make even better choices when you're treating your patient than the average person. So, you know, if some random guy were to say like, yeah, I'll cut off your breasts, little girl, we would absolutely throw him away, lock him away, throw away the key. I support the same thing for doctors. How about you?
100%. I do think we're going to turn this around in the States. I do think we're going to ban this barbarism for kids, but I'm less hopeful about having accountability with these doctors. I would hope that they have
reasonably, I don't think it will actually happen.
Because they're going to do what they've done with the COVID years. They're going to say, how could we have known? We were all just following, you know, But I really do believe that they should. I mean, for me, life in prison. You're mutilating and sterilizing kids. There should be trials, Nuremberg style trials. Like, you knew what you're doing. The WPATH files show they know what they're doing. They also, not only are they admitting that the kids can't, you know, they don't have the cognitive ability to consent, but they're also admitting in these files that they know they're causing harm. There's examples of liver cancer. There's examples of death, and they know this. So it's like, yeah, I think you're a danger to society. I don't think you should belong in the general population.
Yeah. And I think something else that when it comes to this whole trans issue that some people don't talk enough about is the way that this is all linked with big pharma. And, you know, I think, again, that's another industry where during COVID, I was really woken up to just like, wow, you people would literally sell off your country and like your neighbors if it meant you could make a quick buck. When it comes to these transitions, they're patients for life that are essentially guaranteed. And I don't think we can overlook the financial incentive to shove these children down this path. And it's funny because now we're at a place where we can kind of say like, oh yeah, maybe it's not all those kids who really needed to be on Ritalin because, you know, they didn't want to sit still for 8 hours. Like, obviously there was the incentive to like sell off all these pills. But simultaneously, a lot of the same people who are like, oh, no, it's not, you know, whatever. They're just like, yes, definitely take all these hormones for the rest of your life. No problems. Like, I think we probably need to take a look at that.
Yeah.
Jared Stevens says, "Hey, roaming, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is the trans thing? Does it impact society? Sometimes it feels like the right lost focus and fell into this topic a bit too hard. IDK, take care." So I want to hear your take on this first. Are we making a mountain out of a molehill, basically?
No, I think it's the most important, the most pressing part of social justice intrusion into culture and society at the moment. I mean, so the way I define, you know, people are always like, "Oh, what's woke? What do you mean?" Like, woke, when I define it, I also call it social justice. It's the belief system I was in for 20 years. And roughly speaking, it's a belief system that says the best way to look at the world is as a competition for power among identity groups. So in that way, it's kind of a mutated form of Marxism, which said,
right,
the best way to look at the world is as a competition for wealth among class groups. This is concerned with power and identity. So they say we have to redistribute the power among all these identity groups, and then we'll reach equality and everything will be utopia. Within that umbrella, so because it's about identity, if you think of social justice or woke like an umbrella, underneath it, there's all these different categories of identity. And in every single one of them, they divide the groups in there up and they label them oppressor or oppressed. And they also use the words privileged and marginalized. Mm-hmm. It covers race, it covers sex, it covers size, it covers sexuality. The most pressing one right now, I believe, is this, the trans part, the gender ideology part, because of the victims, because of who it's targeting, it's children. And so I think it's the most important thing that we have to be focusing on right now, because of what we're doing to a whole generation of kids. Right. And then, you know, I also talk about the race aspects and the other aspects of this ideology, but until we stop doing this to children, it just remains for me, I think, the most evil part of it currently.
Right. And I, you know, as a parent, when it comes to kids, I don't think there's any one issue affecting children that could be said to not be that big of a deal, right? I mean, there are children, the most important parts of us and our society. We need to be doing everything we can to protect them in every facet. So yeah, if there is this one thing that's negatively affecting them, that's, you know, sending some of them off to be mutilated and permanently disfigured, yes, absolutely, we should be talking about it. I also think we should be talking more about, you know, the human trafficking and, mm-hmm. you know, online predators, as well as, child exploitation material online, like all of these things we should be talking about. When it comes to the trans issue specifically, you make a good point. It's not just the trans issue, right? When these topics are kind of introduced in school, do you think they're simultaneously, you know, trying to trans kids and also saying, and, you know, uphold mm-hmm. the American value system and honor your mother and father? No, of course not. This is an inroad to basically transform their thinking into Marxist thinking. Yes. It's trying to subvert all of our cultural norms. So the trans thing is important, and it's even more important considering that this is a road that activists are using to gain more influence and control over these children's lives. So it's not even just this one thing, though the one thing would be enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, they make no secret about the fact, if you read like the queer theory part of this whole, again, this umbrella, this social justice ideology, they make no secret of the fact that, and I'm talking about the academics here, the ones who, like, let's say, if you think of it like a cult, and you've got the academics at the top, and they're the ones who are coming up with the ideas that get filtered down through education and then through pop culture and media until you have people on TikTok and people in the streets who are speaking woke, but they've never read the theory.
Right.
But they're using the phrases. They're saying things like white privilege and white fragility. And they're saying things about gender identity, but they've never read the theory. However, they're speaking it. It's been filtered down to that level. If you look at the theory, queer theory, it says what you just said, Lauren, they make no bones about it. They want to destroy the nuclear family. They want to destroy anything that's considered a norm or traditional, because they believe that that's necessarily a form of hegemonic power. They believe that it's oppression, that anything that's considered a norm or traditional is only a norm or traditional because of different identity groups who have held power, like oppressively treating that as normal. And so they want to destroy the family. They say this. They also say, and we've seen this part trickle down, they say ageism. Age is another one of these categories, right? Where they say it's an identity category. Adults are the oppressors. Children are the oppressed. They say that if until we treat children as full human beings, that we're oppressing them, and that we need to release children from, you know, these bonds where we treat them differently. And you can see that when they push this gender surgery and stuff, because they say the kids should be able to decide. The kids should be able to decide. No, it's a child. Like we do, our societies always acknowledge that children are different than adults. They're not cognitively developed. We protect them from certain things. The law says we're going to protect kids from, you know, they can't have sex with adults. They can't drink, buy alcohol or cigarettes or get a tattoo or drive a car or buy a gun. And yet this theory, queer theory, has trickled down enough and even in the medical field has now been saying, sure, kids are suddenly able to consent to something as permanent as deciding if they're going to want to have kids or not, you know, taking off their body parts or genitalia, things like that. We're suddenly saying, I mean, it makes no sense. But if you read the theory, it does.
Right.
And they're going to use it to push other things.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think there's a very disturbing link between consent for these medical procedures and exploration of your own gender identity, and then consent for potentially like intercourse.
Yes.
And, you know, this obsession with like gender identity, it's very closely linked to the obsession with talking about sexuality. So I, you know, this is, oh, so you think every single trans person is a pedophile? No, that's not what I'm saying. But I think that, you know, at the core root of this ideology, it's trying to instill upon children who are not capable of informed consent the ability to consent for things that they're definitely not mentally, emotionally prepared for, which is terrifying. Now,
can I just add to that?
Oh, for sure.
That if you read any queer theorist, they openly say what you just implied. Mm-hmm. Like, if you read the book Queer Theory, An Introduction by Anna Marie Jagos, I mean, any of these books, they have in there, they say, like, is there a way to ethically allow children to have sex? Like, mm-hmm. they've like asked these questions, like, you know, should we remove them from these societal bonds that are keeping them from enjoying? You know, they say it. So it's like, wow, okay. Now that part hasn't really filtered down to TikTok yet. You don't see young people defending that yet. But I think eventually,
I think it's going to happen.
It could happen.
Yeah. Shadow Dancer, the Red Mage, says, in the dialectic of sex, the text says childhood is a social construct and that the sexual liberation should be extended to all ages. I mean, we've even, ContraPoints, I think not that long ago, she tweeted out, or I don't want to get deplatformed YouTube, but I don't know what pronouns or whatever. ContraPoints tweeted out that the idea of childhood innocence is just a social construct and that kids should be free to enjoy drag.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Absolutely disturbing. Jared Stevens says, small context of 73 million Americans under 18, around 5,000 are in puberty blockers. But if we look at the percentage rates of the increases already, it's exponential growth. So how long do we need to wait before we think, oh, maybe this is a problem? And even though it's not that many yet on puberty blockers, it's still too many that whose lives are being almost ruined by the medical establishment. There's also, again, the idea that these are young children who, even if they personally identify as whatever or not, they're being introduced to an ideology that undermines the very core foundations of our society. So it's just harmful all in all. But let's look at this Dylan Mulvaney Lady Gaga video. So again, this was for International Women's Day.
I promise you, if you put your mind to it and you work hard and you never give up and you do not listen to the rejection, you can achieve anything that life throws her away.
I mean, it's just weird.
Also, the sentence structure, you can achieve anything that life throws her. What does that mean? Yeah, like, you can achieve trials or hardship? Like, I don't, just the way they wrote it, it's bad writing too. Sorry. Just a little nitpick.
No, it is strange. And just like this was for International Women's Day and highlighting Dylan Mulvaney. When this was released, a lot of people were not very happy with Lady Gaga. They were kind of saying, like, look, this is International Women's Day. Like, if there's one day, maybe we just focus on, you know, women and our specific struggles. Like, even if you are pro Dylan Mulvaney, I think it's pretty safe to say that Dylan Mulvaney's struggles and experiences are very different than the average woman. So a lot of people weren't happy with Lady Gaga, but it got to the point where, sorry guys, if I'm all stuffy, it got to the point where she actually released this statement about the backlash she was getting. This is highlighted by Libs of TikTok. It is not surprising, given the immense work that it's obvious we still have to do as a society to make room for trans lives to be cherished and upheld by all of us. Like, okay, Lady Gaga, I understand you get this. This was supposed to be International Women's Day, though. Okay, so I feel very protective in this moment, not only of Dylan, but of the trans community who continues to lead the way with their endless grace and inspiration in the face of constant degradation, intolerance, and physical, verbal, and mental violence. I certainly do not speak for this community, but I have something to say. I hope all women will come together to honor us all for International Women's Day. And may we do that always until the day that all women are celebrated equally, that all people are celebrated equally, a day where people of all gender identities are celebrated on whichever holiday speaks to them, because people of all gender identities and races deserve peace and dignity. Like, okay, that's fine. But I think there is something to be said. Like, it's International Women's Day. Yes. You chose Dylan Mulvaney.
Yes. So I first of all, once I left Woke, it's a long process to leave. It's like getting into a cult takes a while, getting out takes a while. You know, you're shedding different parts of it over a period of years. And I held on to the feminist label for a little bit. I no longer use that label, but I had an attachment to it, I think, for a while. But now it's sort of, no, you have to leave all of the ideology, including whichever part of it, whichever identity category you came in through. I came in through the women's, you know, the biological sex door, the feminist door. And so I don't really put much stock in days or holidays for different identity groups. I just think it's all divisive and bullshit. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
I think it's all divisive. And so I don't really care. Plus, International Women's Day, it has socialist and communist roots. That's where it came from. But what you're saying is absolutely true. The fact that they set it aside as a day for our group, it's finally our day, guys. And then I saw a thing going around on that
Real
day.
About this. It's like, insane that we.
That was like, don't forget, it's International Women's Day. Don't forget to celebrate trans women. I'm like,
really?
It's like, can we not have one day where it's just about? And that's like. I mean, that's what's kind of crazy to me as someone who's not a feminist, but just kind of watching it unfold. It's really like, even when it comes to what feminist activism is about.
We haven't raised the retirement age in the United States. It's totally
keeps playing. We're talking about Ben Shapiro.
Is that Ben Shapiro talking?
Yeah. It's almost all pivoted toward the trans issue. So, yes. You know, it's about things like pronoun usage. It's about access to women's sports and women's spaces. And it's like, I actually, from the hardcore feminist activist that I started following like 6 years ago when I kind of started producing content, I almost never hear them talk about the usual old-fashioned feminist issues like the wage gap or access to, maternity leave, stuff like that. It's almost entirely the movement been co-opted by trans stuff.
Women. Yeah, absolutely. And I have to laugh at it. I think part of pushing back against it is, you know, knowing the facts, making good arguments, being able to have conversations with people, but also another tool you can use is comedy and laughing and mocking. You know, there's a saying about how the devil hates to be mocked. And I think mocking that is one of the best ways I've found to deal with it and to get over feelings about it. I'm always sort of like, you know, like there was this thing. Did you see that thing? It was a few weeks ago. It said something Girls Week in sports. And then they highlighted three trans women in sports. It's Girls Week in sports. So you know what that means. It's time to celebrate some men in women's sports. Like it just makes you kind of laugh. Like you have to laugh at it, I think.
No, and it's crazy. And I, you know, of all of the issues that are pushing women kind of away from wokeness, I think in some ways the trans issue is doing the most to wake people up just because it's so ridiculous. Like I've kind of mentioned this before, but I follow like makeup accounts on social media so you can see like what products they're coming out with. And makeup community is very, very woke. I mean, you have a bunch of like basically young women on social media. So like the wokest of the woke, but still there are these brands that will try to do something like put a man in makeup to sell this product. And I'm impressed lately by how many comments I see underneath these videos who are just frustrated. They're like, okay, I get it. Like we're progressing, you know, but this is getting to be a little bit much. How many men are actually out there wearing your makeup? You're not doing this because they're a huge market. You're doing this because you want a virtue signal. And I think even left-leaning women are getting kind of fed up about it.
Plus it's also, I've noticed it's starting to affect and have influence over makeup standards for women.
Mm-hmm.
You have beautiful makeup, by the way. I don't know if you do it, but it's very nice. I've noticed a lot of younger women seem to be doing some kind of makeup that's influenced by drag.
Drag, yes.
And by men who are dressing or doing makeup as women. And so 100%. It started to have an effect where you see these young women now in their early 20s and stuff. Who I'm like, you look like a 40-year-old man in makeup because you're doing the artistic style of drag. No, but on a young female face, it's weird.
Absolutely. And this is something where I even look back at my own makeup from like 2016, where like very, very things kind of changed in terms of the trends during the pandemic because people weren't going out. And so everyone started wearing less makeup. But I look at my makeup back then, and I'm like, I look like draggy because it's like,
oh, really?
These big bold eyebrows were in really heavy contouring. And I now realize exactly like what you said, a lot of these makeup trends were inspired by drag artists who have masculine faces. And so they're almost trying to paint on top of that face a more feminine face.
There's painting right here, you know.
Right. But like if you're actually a woman, you don't need to do that. And not only do you not need to do that, it's not flattering if you do that. And I think like when it comes to the fact that everybody is getting fillers and Botox now, I also think that's something that's affected by the fact that, you know, it's not necessarily like hand in hand, one to one with the trans issue, but we're normalizing like all these procedures for people who are transitioning. And then you also have young biological women in their 20s who are like, yes, let me inject lips and cheeks into my face. It's like, you already have that. You don't need that. And everyone just ends up looking worse.
Do you have any guilty television? Do you watch any of like Love is Blind?
No, okay. No.
It's terrible. Don't watch it. But
I mean, I do have guilty. My guilty pleasure is Dr. Phil, but I haven't seen Love is Blind.
So if you do watch it, it's kind of a good sociological. It sort of shows you the state of young people, I guess. Anyway, all the girls on there, they're like in their 20s. They all have filler, huge, huge lips. And when they cry, there's several scenes where they cry, their faces don't move. And they even talk about their Botox and stuff. I'm like, you're 24. What is going on? Like, what's happening? And it makes them look older. And then when you see them without the makeup, like sometimes you see them on the show, like at night or something, they look so young and beautiful. And you're like, something's happening where your makeup and your filler choices and everything are sort of to the extreme. Like my friend has Mandy Stattmiller has a great phrase for it. It's the super normal stimuli where your lips are big, but they're too big kind of thing. And your eye makeup is too big kind of thing. But anyway, sorry to diverge.
I know. No, you're good. I as someone who, these are my peers that it's happening to, obviously, like I've been noticing it. I might do a video about it eventually, but I do want to quickly give a little shout out to the latest Blaze original that's going to be launching tomorrow. So you guys may know this, but over at Blaze TV, we've started this project, Blaze Originals, where we send our different hosts actually on the ground to where these different stories are happening, stories that are not being reported on by the mainstream media. I went over to Maui. Glenn Beck did one, I believe, Eagle Pass in Texas. Well, the next Blaze Original, it's going to be out this Thursday. And actually, I have the trailer here that I want to share with you guys because this thing looks amazing.
Our insecure southern border has dominated American politics for decades. Polls now show that immigration is the top policy concern for 2024. What's happening right here, right now, could determine the fate of the next presidential election. Under the Biden administration, the United States has seen an unprecedented wave of illegal migration. Millions have entered the country illegally. Now, right here in Texas, that has prompted its leaders to launch a multi-billion-dollar campaign to wrest control of its border from the United States government. In doing so, they've provoked what seems to be the greatest constitutional crisis in recent American history. The Texas government standing alone against not only the President of the United States, but also the Supreme Court. But what if all of it was a lie? We came here to the center of it all to see if we could get to the bottom of the single most defining issue of 2024. I'm Jason Buttrell, and this is Blaze Originals.
So exciting, so proud of Jason and really the entire team.
That's the reporter who unraveled Senator Brister on TikTok, by the way.
It's not a good day for me and doing the switcher, but so proud of Jason and the entire team. This looks amazing. You guys can watch it only on Blaze TV. So go to blazeoriginals.com and use the code Border Crisis to get $30 off your Blaze TV Plus subscription. You can also check out the documentary I did, the one that Glenn did, and we're going to have a lot more of these in the future. So this is great on the ground reporting so that the mainstream media just isn't doing themselves anymore. Sorry. Now, let's change gears a little bit and talk about Ben Shapiro. So did you see why he was trending the other day on X?
I did. His social security opinion?
Yes. Yeah, so he basically broke the internet a little bit with this hot take on social security. So here, let me see if I can play the actual video that kind of kicked off this conversation. Now that I'm supposed to play it, let me see if it actually if it actually will. Here, there's Ben Shapiro.
And let's be real about this. It's insane that we haven't raised the retirement age in the United States. It's totally crazy. Joe Biden, if that were the case, Joe Biden should not be running for president. Hey, Joe Biden is 81 years old. The retirement age in the United States at which you start to receive Social Security and you are eligible for Medicare is 65. Joe Biden has technically been eligible for Social Security and Medicare for 16 years, and he wants to continue in office until he is 86, which is 19 years past when he would be eligible for retirement. No one in the United States should be retiring at 65 years old. Frankly, I think retirement itself is a stupid idea unless you have some sort of health problem. Everybody that I know who is elderly, who has retired, is dead within 5 years. And if you talk to people who are elderly and they lose their purpose in life by losing their job and they stop working, things go to hell in a handbasket real quick. But put all of that aside, just on a fiscal level and on a logical level.
Okay, so I mean, there's one argument Ben's made. So the question of whether we should retire, is retiring a good idea? I just want to be clear. When he says he's specifically talking about stopping working at your job, right? There's a lot of debate over like, well, what does retiring really mean if you do this or this? He's talking about you should be working. You shouldn't be retiring and stopping working. He goes on about the Social Security issue.
When Franklin Delano Roosevelt established 65 as the retirement age, the average life expectancy in the United States was 63 years old. Today, the average life expectancy in the United States is close to 80. It's totally insane that you believe that you should be able to work from the time that you are essentially 20 to the time that you are 65, which is a 45-year period, pay in, and then you'll receive Social Security benefits sufficient to support you and your family, you and your wife or whatever, for like another 20 years. That's crazy talk. That is not fiscally sustainable. The notion that if you have to raise the retirement age to 67 or 68, that everyone is going to fall apart. My parents are that age. My parents are not retired. And they shouldn't retire. It would be very bad for them to retire. By the way, it's disrespectful to people who are 67, 68, 69 years old to suggest that they are in the same shape as people who are 65 were in 1940. It's not true at all. Have you met a 65-year-old lately?
Okay. So that's basically the clip. Ben Shapiro, since then, he's been getting a lot of flack for it. And actually, we do have the super chat from K. Max McDonald to comment on Ben Shapiro's Social Security stance. Is it an example of GOP focusing on the wrong issues as usual? The right gets clobbered on cultural and identity politics, and Shapiro wants to talk about economic Darwinism. So I don't know your take on this. What do you think? And I do think, I mean, this is a conversation, the whole Social Security issue that comes up like every now and then, but it's been a hot minute, at least from my memory, that we've kind of talked about it as a culture.
Yeah, this was one of those things where when I left the woke cult, the social justice cult, when I was in that world, I had a lot of what I thought were my own opinions about all kinds of policy issues that were not my own opinions. I hadn't done the work to hold them. I received my opinions from my cult, my tribe. I spoke them with confidence as if I thought they were mine, but I was just being told what to think about lots of things. And ever since I left that world, I'm much slower to figure out, like, if I say something, what my opinion is, I've done work to hold that opinion, to really think about it. And on something like this, I don't know. I don't have an opinion yet. I think what he's saying about the fact that the life expectancy, we've changed that, is pretty interesting. You know, used to be 63, which is kind of funny because he's saying it was 63 and they said you could retire at 65 2 years after life expectancy.
Ben Shapiro, he has gotten like fact checked on that. I'm sorry, guys, okay. Still, but apparently what happened is that life expectancy was being brought down by the fact that a lot of people were dying younger due to like illnesses or whatever, especially like childhood mortality was much higher. But if you were someone who made it to 40, it wasn't like you were expected to die at 63.
Oh, got it. So more childhood mortality. Well, either way, I hear what he's saying about, you know, I'm not a fan of big government anyway. I'm not a fan of, I think they overly tax us. I don't agree with everything they spend on and the way it's grown. I think I saw a stat the other day that said, remember back when Bill Clinton promised to get rid of the debt by the year 2000 or something, we were at like 5 trillion then. What are we at? The debt's now at like 23 trillion or something crazy.
33 trillion. 33? It's actually insane. Like, it's incomprehensibly large. I can't even begin to imagine how much money that is.
It is all going to come crashing down at some point. I definitely believe that. I just, in terms of harping on this issue, I don't know. I kind of agree with the person in your chat who said maybe this isn't the thing to make a big deal about when there's all these cultural issues we could be winning on right now. I will say one thing. I have an opinion about this also. I do agree with him that people, if they don't have purpose, don't do as well, especially later in life, but at all stages of life. And I do remember reading a study about how older people who are in, specifically in retirement homes, I think Jordan Peterson was talking about this, if they introduced something that gave them a job or a purpose while they're in these nursing homes or retirement homes, like if they introduced putting a pet on, you know, that you take care of this pet who lives on this floor, you know, this bird or this dog or what have you, that life expectancy increased and that people's pleasurable mood increased, and that it really gave people, having something to take care of and to be responsible for, gives people a better mood, a longer life. And so I hear his point about that, but that's a matter of personal choice, I think, deciding if you can find purpose outside of your 9 to 5 job, you know.
Absolutely. And I've read studies about how, you know, when grandparents are involved with their grandchildren's lives, including like taking after or looking after them, taking care of them, there are really positive outcomes for both the grandparents and the grandchildren. I think we absolutely need purpose. We need routine in life. And it's sad looking at all the retirees who, you know, once they leave the workforce, not only do they not have purpose, they're also kind of cut off from community. They don't have the same social interactions, which can kind of lead them to despair and, you know, depression and loneliness. It's very sad. And it is a symptom of our industrialized world. This happens.
Yeah.
I think we need to address that, but by telling, especially like a lot of blue collar workers, no, that means you need to keep working at their job. I think it's almost like the problem is, you know, the problem is we've basically thrown away the concept of the extended family in America. Mm-hmm. We're so focused on the nuclear families. What about our extended family?
Right.
And, you know, I don't think it's healthy that your entire social network, your purpose, is stemming just from your job.
That's a great point. Yes.
And that's something that I take issue with. I even had like Gavin McInnes on, I think like just last week, and something that I disagree with him on. He was like, he's kind of the boomer mentality where it's like, you need to be working like 100 hours a week, you know, get that money. And it's like, I know that's kind of almost the quintessential like conservative pick yourself up by your bootstraps mentality. I don't agree with that. I feel like obviously work hard, you know, make a living, invest in your business, do all of that. But I think it's dangerous when we put that over things like family connections, community, church connections. I want to see retired people very involved in their communities and their own families. And it's just, you know, it's sad that kind of lifestyle for most Americans just almost doesn't exist anymore. Like, I don't want a 70-year-old to have to work as a greeter at Walmart just to get social interaction and to feel like they're part of a community.
Right.
That's kind of my opinion. And I feel like, you know, this comes at a time when Republicans, conservatives, they're making really good inroads with the average voter seeming like the no-nonsense, just common sense party. Let's close the border. We don't want it open. Like, over the gender issue, let's not trans kids. This is one issue where that comment kind of that we read, it alludes to, where people like Ben Shapiro now talking about this, they do seem really out of touch. They seem completely out of touch with, like, the average person is struggling to pay for groceries because inflation is so bad. And here we have Ben Shapiro, like, also, you shouldn't be able to retire for like another 2-3
years. Okay, you're going to help. I'll probably have a real opinion on this in a few days. I have to think about it some more, but you make great points. I mean,
but you know
that's sort of saying like the extended family's not, it's that we've killed the concept of the extended family. Therefore, old person, you need to continue working at Walmart so you get like social interaction. That's a great point.
But I love that you're not going to jump on board just any issue just because it's like what other people in, you know, on your side are saying. That's how I feel about healthcare. Mm. Like I've been in the Canadian system. I know the problems with that system, but I've also been in the American system and I know the problems with it. So, you know, I know there are a lot of people on the right who are like, we just need like X, Y, or Z. When it comes to something like health insurance, I am happy to say I do not know the answer. I don't know what the perfect system is. I just know, here are the problems with the Canadian system. These are the problems with American system. Like, I just don't know. I don't know what to do there. I know problems and I can complain about them, but I'm very useless in that I don't know how to fix that particular
situation.
That's
okay. I say the same thing about climate change. You know, it's like,
yeah,
people want me to have an opinion on it. I know I haven't done enough research on it. There are more pressing things for me right now. Like all of the social justice woke stuff that I came out of, my old belief system. So I don't have an opinion yet on climate change. The only opinion I have on it is that I do know the government is trying to use it to justify restricting individual rights. And I oppose that. I know what the government's trying to use it for. Is it real? Or, you know, how much is the climate changing? I'm skeptical.
Right.
But I don't have
That's how I kind of feel. And I don't know. Do you know Daisy Cousins and her work? She's great. She's
familiar. Australian.
Very snazzy dresser. You should check her out. But she describes herself as a climate centrist. And I feel like that's because I love the environment. I consider myself a conservationist. I don't want pollution. Like I don't want sea turtles to die. But I also look at the Green New Deal and it seems pretty obvious to me, like, okay, you guys just want socialism and you're trying to use the climate as an excuse to bring that in.
They're using it as, my husband and I were in Europe last year. He's a musician, so I get to travel with him sometimes, which is great. One of the countries we went through is the Netherlands. And it's so crazy because they're using the climate there to justify taking all this land from the farmers. And it's a total government intrusion into property rights, individual rights. And that's kind of waking a lot of people on the left there up. There's a lot of people I met there who I would say are based, if you use that term kind of broadly to mean reality-based, but progressive. They're like hippies. But they're base, they're not woke. And it's the climate thing being used to take land from farmers that's waking them up.
No, definitely. And I feel like with the climate issue and farmers, people are saying, shouting out, I got kind of chewed out for not being able to pronounce her last name correctly last time I mentioned her. I feel like I'm justified, guys. Eva Vladenbroek. Sorry. She speaks about the farmer issue a lot and the way it's tied into climate change. It's kind of frustrating because you have these elitists who live in like urban areas who just go to the supermarket to buy their food, telling oftentimes rural farmers, people who are actually making these foods, that, hey, your lifestyle is responsible for climate change. Yeah. And it just screams being out of touch because like they're the ones who are feeding us and it's also their job. You're essentially saying, I don't think you should be able to support your family because climate change, which is very, very easy and convenient if you're someone who lives in the city, your job is either being a journalist or an activist full time. Again, it just screams out of touch.
Yeah. Plus, there's not as much, now that they've been focusing so much on climate change and pushing this phrase, and there's less focus or interest on things like you were talking about, like pollution. I don't even hear pollution much anymore at all.
Right. It's all about the
environment. Yeah.
Like the CO2 emissions, which is crazy because when I was When I back in my day, you know, it was actually like, let's talk about the pollution, the dirt, the garbage that we are putting into the atmosphere, which I feel littering. Like, yeah, littering. That's, I think, something we should all get on board with. Do you guys know the Ocean Cleanup Organization? They have these giant ships that actually they go to these giant, garbage patches in the ocean and clean it up, and they take out the plastic and they recycle it. It was founded by this guy in his 20s, Boyan Slat or something, who's this actual conservationist. He is doing real work to clean up the environment, but we almost never talk about him in favor of what's her name, Greta Thunberg, who hasn't really done measurably much to improve the environment, but it's just really interesting because, you know, Boyan Slat, he's solutions oriented. He's like, I see garbage, I wanted to clean it up, this is how I'm doing it. Greta Thunberg is just like, hey, let's actually be communists. We see between the two of them,
yes,
which one our media likes.
Yes, I think Greta and in Germany, we were in Germany last year too. What do they call themselves there? The last generation. They're so arrogant. The climate change actors there call themselves the last generation. And I think they should all go to the trash island and clean it up. Go spend some time then doing something other than sitting and blocking traffic so people can't get to the hospital or to their job, you know?
Yeah, and that's what with, is it Extinction Rebellion? They're, I think, a great example of how even if there are so many people who care about the environment, but if you're doing activism that's just desecrating like cultural landmarks, whether that be art or statues, and you're making people's day-to-day lives harder, you're basically going to lose the battle already. And I feel like I've even seen that for people who I otherwise agree with. And I'm like, you're not helping anybody. You're certainly not helping us. Like, I agree with you, but I'm starting to not agree with you just to spite you because you're being a real brat about things.
Yeah.
No, it's crazy. So at this point, if you guys have any Q&As for Carrie, please send them in. I love what she's doing, raising awareness about the woke issue from her perspective as someone who's come out of it. I often hear that it's almost useless to talk to people who describe themselves as into social justice or progressive. What percentage of people do you think are actually reachable who are currently the ones, at the forefront of pushing all these policies? Because I admit sometimes I feel like a black pill, like it's pointless. People like you, though, are kind of evidence that it's not.
So on my channel on Deprogrammed, I have a lot of people in the audience who have lost family members to social justice or to woke. And I have people who've left social justice and woke. I mean, and so I know it's possible to leave. I was in it for 20 years. I know it's possible to leave. There are people who started hate watching my channel, social justice people who are now some of my best friends who left it. It is possible. But it's really, I would almost suggest for people who are interested in it to familiarize yourself with how cults function. I watch a lot of cult documentaries, and it doesn't matter if the cult is very different from the social justice cult. You can still learn things about coercion, control, manipulation, changing language, which is a big thing. And you can learn about whether you're watching. I mean, Netflix has a documentary out right now. I think it's Netflix about the Twin Flames cult. It's entertaining, but it's also helpful to understand how that cult worked. And so you asked me what percentage are reachable? I think that this is just me guessing, but I think probably as many as 10 to 25% of people in it are just full on cluster B sociopaths. I don't think they're reachable. I think they're horrible people. They have bad intent. They are using it. They're con artists. They use the ideology to oppress others. They want to gain fame, wealth, power through the belief system. And that's probably true for any ideology. I mean, look at Christianity. There are con artists who use Christianity, who use the sincere beliefs of others to gain power, money, you know, fame. So I think maybe 10 to 25% are those types. And then maybe another 10 to 25% are reachable. And those people I call the sincere believers. The sincere believers, a lot of them have big hearts. You know, I hear from parents, they say, my child got pulled into this in college. She has a big heart. She just wants to help. I'm like, I know that those people are very susceptible to this belief system, especially young people. They believe it is what it says it is. They think it's about ending racism and sexism and, those sincere believers you can reach. Mm-hmm. And so that's when you're talking to someone, it's helpful to know which, to try and figure out which kind you're talking to. And then the third kind, which is probably most of them, are just followers. They're only casually in it anyway. They don't really care. They just go wherever culture goes. So if culture were to change tomorrow and become a predominantly Christian nation,
they'd just go with it.
They would go with it because they just go wherever they're followers. If you look at look up the Ash conformity experiments, these experiments, I think they started doing them in the 50s or 60s. Those experiments blew my mind because they showed that as many as maybe 75% of people in some cases just follow. They just follow. They would bring people in a room and they would draw lines, and one line would be much larger, longer than the rest. And they would go down the row and ask all these people sitting side by side to pick the longest line, but they would all be in on it. They'd all be plants except for the last guy. And they would have the plants pick the wrong line. And then the last guy
would go with it,
would go with it and pick whatever the other people picked, even though it was obviously not the longest line. Isn't that insane?
It's human nature is crazy. When I was in college, we learned about this social experiment where they had these volunteers come in, and it was kind of staged as if they were doing this experiment on this other person, but really they were the experiment, where the other person would be hooked up to something that was supposedly giving them an electric shock. It actually wasn't. It was just an actor. But they would tell the person who they were coming in with, they would say, basically they would tell them to shock this person. And, they would do it a little bit, and, the shock would supposedly get stronger. Up until the point where it was like actually physically hurting the person they were supposedly shocking, and the person would start to say, please stop. And, the participant, if they were to like, should we keep going? The only thing that the person who was conducting the experiment would say is the experiment requires that you comply or something like that. Most people, just with that gentle prodding, would submit another person to basically torture. Yeah. And it was shocking. And, we look at things like, the Holocaust, World War II, the pandemic, we see how easy it is to get, it's just human nature. But I also think that
you're drawing all the right links. That's exactly.
It's terrifying.
Human nature. During the COVID years, it's like, we got to learn in real time about human nature. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, you're fine. So Sean, friend of the channel. So he recently put out a tweet saying, that tomboy girl, she's basically dating someone named who looks like Steve Rogers. I thought Steve Rogers was an actual person. I know who Captain America is. Now he's making fun of me. Carrie and Lauren teaming up. Wow, wow, wow. I wonder if Carrie knows Steve Rogers is Captain America. Okay, fine. I deserve that. I have a media channel. I do Marvel reviews. You can drag me. I'll fight you naked. He asks, why am I the only atheist I know who didn't go woke?
I don't know. But, when I interview people about this, most often they say either they have a background where they have a family member who escaped communism, so they've seen this before in some shape or form, a similar thing, or they have a real aversion to authority and are very skeptical, or something else sometimes that happened in their childhood, like abuse or something that showed them to be skeptical of authority. I don't know.
I feel like when I look at the atheist movement and, when I first started watching YouTube in like 2014, their atheism versus Christianity was like this huge topic. You had a lot of channels like Atheism is Unstoppable, The Amazing Atheists, who were like, it was basically the thing to diss religion. And I've kind of been following the online atheist movement since then. It's been interesting to see how woke most of it has gotten, because I feel like for a lot of atheists, not all of them, but for a lot of them, like a lot of Christians or religious people, their beliefs aren't necessarily ones that they've arrived to because of rational thought or like a logic experiment. It's just like, well, this makes sense, so let me go with it. And so, atheism, like a lot of institutions or social movements now, has also been co-opted by wokeness. And I think it's been a great example of how, like, no, just because you're an atheist, that doesn't mean you're more rational, that you're less prone to propaganda or any of the lies that the atheist movement used to say about religious people. You have your own religion. You have your own propaganda. It's just that yours happens to be anti-God is what I think it comes down to.
I think you're right.
Shadow Dancer, the Red Mage, says, I have a question. What is your stance on artificial womb technology? It has also been advocated as a liberation of women's burden.
I think it's awful. I was about to say, I just think it's evil. I think humans are trying to play God. I know I'm speaking, this is more of a moral position, I guess. I think it's immoral. And I also think it furthers the goals of this social justice, woke, whatever you want to call it, identity Marxism. It fuels the goals, which is to destroy everything that's traditional, to destroy the nuclear family. And even they want to destroy, they think they can play God and destroy biological reality, you know? Mm-hmm. It also reminds me, if you read some feminist fiction, because it's so fun, I'm kidding, but I read some feminist fiction when I was in college. And the book, Woman on the Verge of Time. Oh, I can't remember. I can't believe I remember that. It's this feminist utopian novel. It's supposed to be a sci-fi feminist utopia. Now reading it, it's more like a dystopia. Like, this is crazy. But it's where this woman's envisioning what the feminist future would look like. And it's much like Brave New World. It's where the babies are born outside of the womb, in test tubes. They're raised by groups of people, by the community rather than by a family, you know. So we don't have any attachments to any traditional roles. They're raised as babies without gender. I mean, feminists have been writing this kind of fiction since the 70s, that this is what they want to see.
Yeah, and I think anything that divorces children from the optimal conditions, which we know are being raised by a married mother and father who are biologically related, I think is a negative. And so you're against adoption? No. But, you know, adoption, Ali Stuckey, she makes a great case for it. She says, you know, adoption is trying to fix a broken situation, things like surrogacy, things like artificial womb, that's creating a broken situation. Yes. So I think this, you know, when it comes to even like surrogacy, some of the IVF conversations, I know IVF is there are different situations and circumstances and practices regarding IVF. I'm not going to paint it all with one brush, but all of these things, they are placing the desires of adults over the best interests of children. And I think it's terrifying. And I think it's wrong.
Yes.
K Max McDonald says, Carrie, do you think someone like Elon Musk was once woke like yourself and got converted away? He used to never speak out on politics and now always does. It seems like they always push too far.
I have no idea. I didn't follow him religiously or anything. My guess would be that no, if he ever spoke woke things at all, he was probably just casually woke, like a lot of people in business are. They just casually speak it. They're not true believers, and they're also not.
It's just what HR is like.
Yeah, it's just like, well, this is what we do now. She, her, you know, like
whatever.
Yeah, so I don't know, but something woke him up to a lot of what's happening in society, though, it seems to me. He seems to be very, his eyes are wide open about a lot of things. I don't think he was ever woke, no.
It's funny, you know, speaking of just like the average person who's just casually on board with it, a while ago, I had to get my eyes checked because if you are familiar with my lore, I got LASIK like 5 years ago. It was amazing, but my vision has gotten worse since then. Like, my prescription is back. So I now need glasses and I want to get LASIK again, but I need to set aside some time to actually do it and recover. So for now, I'm back on glasses. Irrelevant to the story, I was at the optometrist and, you know, the nice old Southern lady who was helping me check out with the glasses that I chose, I noticed that she had a pin that said she, her on it. And this is like suburban Tennessee. We're not in Nashville. I was like so curious about it. And so I kind of played dumb. I didn't want to like fight with anybody, but I was just like, oh, you know, why does your name tag say she, her on it? And it was really interesting because she said like, oh, well, you know, We just do that so that trans people know that we're accepting of them.
Okay.
And like, that was what she thought of it. And it was just like, you know, like, oh yeah, I'm okay with, I don't hate trans people. It was like the purest but most uninformed motivation. And I just thought that, you know, for a lot of people, that's probably what it is, especially in the corporate world. They're just like,
they don't know.
They don't know. Yeah. They don't know.
I love, by the way, that you said that, Lauren, to her, because I always say, encourage people, in your real life, you don't have to stand on a soapbox and preach about your beliefs about woke, whatever, but you can push back in small ways just by asking questions or making jokes, and it's okay. And can I tell you one quick anecdote from yesterday as well?
Sure.
About a doctor. I was at the doctor yesterday, and this was in suburban Texas, not Austin, but they asked me, I was getting a massage and alignment. They said, do you want a male or female practitioner? And I was like, oh, no preference. And then I thought for a second, I was like, just make sure it's one or the other though. And then they all laughed. I was like, I don't know if they're going to laugh or not. They did. Yeah. They all laughed because there's only two biological sexes. Come on, kids. So it's like, you can make those little jokes. Now, if that had fallen flat, it's still, I don't care. I'm still glad I said it. Like,
it's just like a little harmless way to like a little black breadcrumb. So Adam talks this, do you have astigmatism or anything? I used to have astigmatism. So I like could not drive at night. It was really, especially if it was raining at night, I couldn't see anything. Now the astigmatism was fixed, but my prescription for like distance is back. And actually the reason why I kind of found out that my eyes had gotten worse is because I went to go switch my license from a Canadian license to a Tennessee license and I failed the vision test. So that was my like, oh, I guess I need glasses. Off at you naked, ash conformity was neutral, now attached social pressure and moral judgment. Interesting. Actual justice warrior, they redid the shock experiment with NUC Puerto Ricans. When the scientists came back, the actor bled out. They asked what happened. The lady said the shocks were broken, but luckily I had a switchblade. Yes, and by the way, the shock experiment is the experiment that I absolutely preferred my description of. Thank you, Sean, for actually seeing past that. So Carrie, it's been so much fun. Where can people follow you, keep up to date with what you're doing and your content?
You can find me online, Real Carrie Smith, on almost all platforms, and it's Carrie, K-E-R-I. The show's called Deprogram with Carrie Smith, and you can find it wherever you get podcasts. And Lauren, I've had such a great time talking to you. So nice to finally meet you. I've watched you for years. I saw somebody try to take you down the other day. I keep an eye on some feminist channels and stuff, and it was like, feminist takes apart Lauren Chid, anti-feminist. She did not do a great job.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I need to look that up because that sounds like an amazing video to respond to.
It was good.
Guys, again, we're going to be at the Vulcan Austin April 27th. So definitely come see us and get Carrie. Again, thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And we will see you next time. Take care.
Bye.